Blog Talk Radio.
Down the Tube, Really Random Stuff with Miss Darkholm, brought to you by A Team of Voices. A Team of Voices is a group located on allpoetry.com. It is the largest poetry site in the world. It is also free to join. So if you like to listen, like to participate, feel free to come on over, look up stuff in the group tab, and come knock on our door, as Deborah Lee would like to say. Tonight, we will be talking about really random stuff. And before we get into that, I do want to give a little bit of information on the opening music. It was The Old Apartment by Bare Naked Lady. And it was the frontman, Ed Robertson, discussed. It was often a misunderstood song. People think that it's a disgruntled ex-partner breaking into the apartment to a mess with a current relationship of an ex. But it is actually about the building the couple has moved out on together, and the guy is going back and is pissed off at the people who have changed this place, and that was special to him. I have to say, the first time I think I heard this song, I think I had that perception too. So it's pretty fun how it kind of changes it, the perspective to a non-disgruntled to a pretty fun going back song. And, yeah, so I hope you enjoyed it. And tonight, like I said, we are going to be talking about some really random stuff. You guys had some prompts, which were watermelon snow, some marble caves of chili, some carnivorous caterpillars, which I'm pretty excited about. I know that some people wrote about that. And, of course, Snake Island. So I hope you guys like the prompts. You can tell me all about it when I let you guys on, which I'm going to do now. Hello, Raconteur.
Hello, Sky.
How are you?
Dealing with the change in the weather, dealing with health, dealing with life.
That's good. And we also have AP. Hi, AP.
Hello, Sky. Hi, Rex. How are we going?
What's up, AP?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Good. If you were not feeling well, we've got a giant Carlton out on the board, and it will make you well just by viewing it. I just keep getting bigger and bigger. I don't know what Steven's doing. And last but not least, hi, Steven.
Hello.
How's it going?
I'm sorry?
I know what's happening. That is a huge problem. So what do you guys think about the
interesting
I
stuff.
Like the prompt. I like the prompt. Good prompt. Quality.
Good. As Deb likes to say, I like to give people their homework. Lots of homework videos. AP, I
Why
know
not?
That you usually don't have a lot of time. Steven, do you have a little bit?
Yeah, I can wait for AP. Sure.
Okay. And I don't have a poem for you, AP, but I know you have one.
I'll put it on the board. Yeah, I do. I do.
Okay.
I do. I am on snakes. I'm on snakes, Sky, and I am not a fan of snakes, yeah? And I'm not. I'm just not. And when the snakes intersect with the natural enemy of the young married man, then you know there is problems. And so this is a poem called A Visit to the Mother-in-Law's Place. And it goes a little bit like this. My mother-in-law loved the bush, had a thing for frogs and their grace. I thought silly. My wife said, shush, seen visitors in this place. 4 hours from Perth in a hire car, where land kisses the southern sea, inside a state forest, a pass drive far with my very young family. Once inside the house, I saw a feature of water lilies and calm tumbling water, and there were a dozen creatures, here frogs at every quarter. And so, being practical, I piped up, but don't they attract a few snakes? Well, yes, they eat a few for sup, division of critters as cakes. Then shone the reptiles' burrows. There were 5 just in the front yard. Forehead must have been furrows as quickly toured to discard. Soon after lunch, we went on a walk to see the wild flowers of spring just in the middle of their talk when this yellow flash zing. A 3-meter tiger tied onto boot of my relative's partner just ahead. It detached, then into bush scoot, before I could turn my head. Could not get out quickly enough. What if it had been a boy concerned? Manners did not give a stuff. And you know, I never returned. End poem.
Oh my God! Is this a true story, AP?
This is a true story. Absolutely a true story. And I have got a picture of a western tiger snake at the top of that pong, which is the thing that attached itself to the boot. It is a bloody awful thing. It looks like a freaking cobra, and it is yellow underneath. And I swear, when they move, it looks like a yellow flash.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Now, you think that you would be, don't you guys got, like, tons of deadly stuff out there? You think you'd be used to it? Oh,
they
my
say everything is killing you, trying to kill you.
Oh, man. I tell you, like, eastern tiger, I put a picture on the board of an eastern tiger snake, right? Because they're moderately aggressive, but and that's a picture of the eastern tiger snake before the dancing man. The eastern tiger snake, that is a picture from the wildlife reserve, which my school used to back onto. Right? So that's a snake that was, you know, living around where my school was. And you can see, I mean, it's slightly brown and sort of sizzled, but if you look at the picture on the top of that, you know, palm that I just shared, it does look like, to all intents and purposes, a friggin' cobra. You know, they are nasty.
Oh, my goodness. Well, before I make my comment, which I will in a moment, I seen this, watching something, and it was about this guy who decided to dress up in this suit to prevent, a snake to consuming him. And he allowed the snake to swallow him whole. I don't know why people would do that. It was insane.
No.
They had to cut him out, why would you do that? The whole thing was just messed up. Right. I was just like, oh, my God. What is it? First of all, it's messed up to do that to the snake, and then it's messed up to do that. Why would you even do that in the first place? I don't know.
No, I'm with you.
Anyway.
Well, I'm with you.
Crazy things.
Anyway, there you go.
Yeah. But this poem is brilliant. One, because I love that it's a true story. I was very much engaged throughout the whole thing. I love the way that it flows through and how you bring into this picture and you bring us through. Okay, well, doesn't that the frogs and stuff, doesn't that bring, oh, yeah, a little bit. And then all of a sudden you start to see all these little holes. And so throughout the beginning of the piece, I'm picturing, going on this visit myself and seeing all these holes. And, yeah, I would be staying inside too. But don't they attract snakes? Well, yes, a few. And I thought this was super creative to vision of critters as cakes. I really love that. I love the playfulness and the creativity and the imagination of critters, you know, as cakes. I think that is quite brilliant to kind of place in a story. Because, I mean, stories are stories, but when you start putting metaphor and poetic devices and things like that into stories, then you have, you know, a poetical story, which is much different than just a straight story, I think. But I love how you did that. And then again, all the way down here, to see the wildflowers in spring, just the middle of their talk, when this yellow flash is seeing, I love that too, because you gave a little bit of a nod to comic books, which is pretty clever there as well. And then again, at the end, I never returned. And I loved it. I thought it was creative. I loved that it was a real story. I loved the way that you cut into little bits of these beautiful little metaphors and these creative things in it. Brilliantly done. And I agree with you. I would be right out of there.
I was. You couldn't see me for justice, guy. I was like, holy shoot, you know, what if that had just been me? What if I decided to be the first person? And, you know, because he fortunately, he had steel cap boots. And they had steel all the way through, and so the tiger snake got hold of the boot but didn't get through the steel cap.
Wow. Yeah. I've never encountered a really bad snake. We don't have – I mean, I guess we do have – and I go in the woods a lot, but we have a lot of garden snakes around here. I don't think we – if we do, I don't think that's very – I mean, we've got some spiders, but
yeah.
I don't think we have a lot of snakes around here in New Hampshire that are kind of crazy like that. So,
These critters are just angry. They're narky. You know, they just go for anything that moves. They're just really nasty.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Let me Let me see what our rat thinks about this.
I think in the States we've only got two really venomous states snakes. But as far as the poem goes, I love the foreshadowing in it because too often people think, you know, oh, it's a good idea, and they don't think, you know, a situation through. You know, it's like you saw the food right away, and you thought like a snake, and you're like, you know, dude, it's, look what you're doing. You're putting out a buffet. I mean, people don't realize, you know, that they don't think about that. That they're like, oh, but the flowers are so pretty. I want to look at the flowers. You know, it's like, you know, there's consequences to things like that. You know, and nature doesn't. What is it they say? Nature abhors a vacuum. But yeah. I think statistically, the most venomous creatures, the most accumulation of venomous creatures, is Australia. So. I'm trying to remember the name of the snake that starts with a T. I think it's a Timbal or something like that. Thank you. That's one of the incredibly venomous snakes that doesn't live in the ocean. That I think that's native to Australia, if I'm not mistaken.
A slight technical aside, Rack. We are very, very lucky because the snakes here are so old. So they've got the most dangerous venom. But unlike cobras, where the venom is actually enclosed within the fangs, the venom here in the snakes in Australia goes down grooves in the outside of the fangs. And so it means that technically they don't get as much venom in. So even though it's more venomous, they get less venom into you, if you see what I'm saying.
It's not an injection like the hollow of the other thing.
No. It's sort of like a prong.
Okay.
Approach. But anyway, that's the So there you go.
Yeah, that's actually what I was leading into, because one of the most amazing things I find about the snakes is like you mentioned, the different types of venom, the delivery systems as well. There's the ones that like shatters everything that it touches. And then there's a different one that affects the nerves differently. It's really
that's
incredible, the subtle differences.
Yeah.
But you know, and the anti-venom, I mean, it's crazy. I've seen the milk a snake, if you've ever seen that on YouTube as well.
Yeah.
That's an interesting thing to look at. Watch them, you know, smack the fangs onto the little jar and watch it come out. It's crazy to watch.
It is. You're right. I bet so much respect for those people who do that.
What I find really funny. Invariably, when they interview those people, they're like, "Have you ever been bitten?" And they're like, "Oh yeah, sure."
Crazy, absolutely crazy. Anyway, thank you, Rack.
Thank you, Rack. And I see Stephen has got some snakes on the board. We'll see what he thinks about the poem.
Yeah, I like this a lot. I like the fact that it's a true story, and it is amazing how some people are so nonchalant about certain things when others, you know, have great fear for them. You know, I kind of feel that way. I used to feel that way about spiders until I owned one as a pet, and then I kind of had to interact with it. But, I could understand why you wouldn't go back. And I did quote Indiana Jones in my comment on, you know, snakes. Why did it have to be snakes? But, run my kid.
Okay, indeed.
Thanks, Ben.
Yeah.
Awesome, and I think I'm not sure if Deb heard it. Hi, Deb.
Hello.
How are you?
Hanging in, how are you?
Good. Did you hear AP's poem?
Well, I didn't get to hear him read, but I was reading while you guys were chatting, and I'm sitting there thinking that I don't, I'm not usually afraid of a snake, but I think if I got in there and there were dozens of things going on, I might reconsider. and I thought this was like, for some reason, I think I remember you talking about this, so this has to be a true story.
Oh, it's a true story, right. Yep.
Yeah. Okay, I could tell by your voice. But, okay, now I'm at the end. Could not get out quickly enough. What if that's been a boy? Concerned manners did not give a stuff, and, you know, I never returned. Well, I can't say I blame you there. Now, were these specific ones that you dared to enter their new den or whatever you call pit, their pit? Were those dwellers poisonous?
Oh no, they're very poisonous. Yes, they're very venomous. Yes, they basically will the venom acts in about less than 2 hours. It's a very very nasty beast of a snake. Yep.
Now, I heard you. I think when I got here, you were explaining the difference between snake bites, like say a syringe. Versus a snake that
correct.
Scrapes you open and plants some nasty in there. Just wondered if it was a nice little family of those waiting inside. I suppose eventually nature and her critters takes over everything given the chance. This is really cool, though. I can picture your face, like, probably the same look you have on your face if someone tried to get you to go up in a hot air balloon. Just saying.
Exactly the same, Deb. Exactly the same face. Yep. You got it.
Awesome. Thank you, Deb. And before I am going to say a little bit about the snake prompt. Before I do that, because I know that AP, you're a little pressed, thank you, first of all. Thank you for writing. Always brilliant. And do you want to plug your show for Saturday?
I probably should, but I probably should even plug my show for Friday as well, because we are on the great adventure that is Tic Mac Poe for Friday. And so the one, the only poetry quiz show is going out for its, occasional ride that it does. And so it's out on Friday. And then on Saturday, we do have the normal everyday Hatter, Deb and myself show. And the prompt this week is Blackbird. So my short thing about Blackbird is stay away from Western Tiger Snakes. But apart from that, all good.
Blackbird singing in the dead of night.
That was the first thing I thought about. See, we do got rattlesnakes. But I don't ever see them around. Well, thank you, AT. And those shows are both at 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right?
Yes, they are.
Just so everybody knows. Awesome. Mr. Wayne Gent has thrown out a challenge to anybody who thinks they might be able to knock him off his pedestal because he's kicking butt and taking names, just saying.
I think he's won 6 in a row or something, Deb. Something ridiculous like that, just quietly. So.
Oh, yeah, and the trash talk builds each time. He's like, come on, I'll knock him down. I'm like, okay.
So I'm most of the way through constructing the poems for that show. So it's going to be a good one. There's already some great poems from me and others. So no, it should be a fun show.
Usually,
yes.
Thank you, AT.
Have
a
nice one.
Taking the time.
Thank you. Okay. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Take it easy.
I am going to say a little bit about the prompt that he wrote too. It was Snake Island, and it was really cool. It was probably my longest. But it's worth watching if you haven't watched it. And it's about Snake Islands off the coast of Brazil in the Atlantic Ocean. And it's a small island of 106 acres and a temperate climate. And it's the terrain varies considerably, ranging to bare rock to forest. But it is the home of a critically endangered venomous snake, which is the golden lance-head viper, which has a dying bird. Snakes become trapped in the island when the rising sea levels covered up the land that connected the mainland. And people aren't even allowed out there. And then you have to get special passage to go out there. It's off limits. And it's definitely just a snake island. And the prompt was you could go wherever you want. I wrote this little thing that you could write a fictional poem, thriller, or are the snakes cuddly? You know, you choose. So I'm glad that AP went with a homemade story. Really well done. And, something happened. All right, so I have got Stephen on the board. I believe he wrote about caterpillars. Is that right, Stephen?
We'll wait and see.
Oh, this one is pretty cool. I'm going to say the information first this time, not last. But this one was cool. It was the Prop 3, the carnivorous caterpillars. I really love alliteration. And, oh, my goodness, this thing is like... This is nightmares. I don't know about this. Go ahead. Do you want to read and then I'll tell my stuff? I don't want to take anybody.
No, whichever way you want to do it.
Oh, I thought you were saying. Yeah, so this is found in the wet forest and the shrublands. 18 known species in Hawaii are unique from other members of the genus. Unlike their herbivorous brethren, they're carnivores and they capture live prey. And if you're looking to be daring, go look at the topic. And I've still got the gift up there of that thing looking like a branch and going out and using camouflage to catch the fly. It's pretty crazy. So, you know, this one I thought you guys could have fun with. I thought you guys could either go factual or you can give me a super scary story. Or is it just a guy looking for some grub? So I'm pretty excited to see where you got. I think you and Deb both wrote to that one. So I'm pretty excited about it. Mm-hmm. All right, I am ready when you are.
All right. This is called Bitter Cold Evades Caterpillar Hold. Hiding in the vibrant marbled caves, so smooth and cold to touch, canoeing through the greens and blues, missing sun on Orr's crutch. Upon the surface live the hissing snakes, the deadly slithering ground, lancehead of gold, pit viper bold, venom kills without a sound. Caterpillar head with fingers five do come and serpent eat, then look for you down in the cave, warm blood flesh just can't be beat. So flee from cavern up to the north in watermelon scenes of rind snow, better pink stained pants than twisted death's dance, meat eating larva, you know. And pump.
Oh, this is awesome. You combine them. This is cool. I like that. I was worried. I'm like, nobody wrote about the watermelon. No. But you did. This is really awesome. When I saw the watermelon snow, I'm like, what is going on with that? But this is really cool. First of all, I love that you were creative and you combined all the prompts. I think that is quite brilliant in the story, and it's a bit of a brevity, really. So it's kind of cool how you were able to do that. The vibrant marble caves, which, by the way, I thought were just absolutely beautiful. So I love that you're first bringing in this majestic scene. And then all of a sudden, we're at a stop. And then upon the surface, hissing snakes, you know, bringing in that snake island on the beautiful cave scene. And then you even brought in the lancet of gold and the pit viper, which I thought was just absolutely brilliant. And then each stanza is its own tribute to each prompt. And then again, the caterpillar head of the fingers five. Come, I'm going to steal all the lines. Steps and be mad at me. This is payback. I love that, bringing in the caterpillar and then, of course, the watermelon snow. But this is my favorite. The last two lines are my favorite. The last three, I guess. The pink stained pants, then twisted death dance. I really, really love that. I that's my favorite part, my favorite line. I thought it was a really creative line. This was really cool, Stephen. And I like how you've got, like, this caterpillar up there. Got him hanging out, that little Alice Wonderland caterpillar hanging out. So this was brilliant. Bravo on twisting all the prompts together and giving them each their own stanza and somehow making it into a cohesive story. Of fiction. Brilliant, brilliantly done, but still bringing in the factual stuff like the gold head lancet and the marble cave.
Thank you, Scott.
No, thank you. And that's pretty cool. Frack and tour.
Yeah, this is really enjoyable, Stephen. My ears perked up when you mentioned that you had a pet spider. You know, there's something about those creepy crawlies that's intriguing. But, you know, not knowing, you know, enough about, you know, everything, you know, it always makes me approach with trepidation. You know, I mean, they're beautiful to look at and you want to play with them, but it's like, you know, I don't know if the damn thing's venomous, so I'm always going to be afraid to touch it. And then, you know, it's even like people have tarantulas, and it's like, oh no, you know, he's still got his venom. I'm like, well, then why am I petting him? Why do I, you know, there's so much that's so interesting that you know, it kind of lures you in, and you wanna get close and you wanna see, but it's like, but it's not safe. There's got to be some, you know, some sense of I don't know, logic or what's the word I'm fishing for? Caution. You know, you don't know what some of these things. What is it? There's one of those the caterpillar that's got the spines on it that can make you sick.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that it's you know, that it's gonna eat you. It's not carnivorous, but it's still got poison. So it's like, you know, I don't know. I guess too easily distracted, intrigued, however you want to put it. It's really cool. I love the write, though. You know, you included the facts and everything, and I noticed right away, you know, that you brought in all the prompts. I thought that was really clever too. You know, kudos for that. I'm sure it wasn't easy, because they do seem very dissimilar. You know, one's a location, but then when you start talking about snakes and everything else, it's like, okay, how do you tie that in? You did a great job fleshing out that story and putting this together.
Thank you, Rick.
Excellent comment. I was definitely one of those people that just always picked up caterpillars. But, you know, you don't touch the ones with the spikes. The big puffy ones with the spikes you can't touch. The other ones are okay. That's what I was always told. Whether it's right or not, I'm still alive. It's all right.
I used to pick up the yellow ones and had the spikes all the time. I never got hurt.
There's like these black and sandy red striped ones with these really, they're really puffy, and they have like these little spiky things. They're like, and I was always told never to touch them.
They're like needles.
Yeah, and they're striped. They're like black, and it's like a sandy red. I think I actually have a picture of one somewhere, but maybe I'll put it up so you can find it.
They're beautiful.
Woolly bears.
Those you don't just touch those, right? That's what I was always told. I don't know if it's true or not, but I never touched them.
I've handled them before, never gotten hurt, but I don't know. I mean, you never know. I handled my tarantula all the time, too, and I never got bit, so it maybe it'll piss them off.
I don't know. I won't do that. We were just talking about this the other day, about how Stephen had tarantulas and piranhas and snakes, and what was the other thing? There was one more thing.
No, I think that's it. Tarantulas, piranhas, and snakes.
Too bad. I thought you were going to say scorpions.
I told him. Scorpions glow on. the creepy scorpion
glow on the.
I've had the piranhas and a ball python, but I've never had the tarantula. I've had guinea pigs, hamsters, little white mice. Like if you let them mate, they make food for your python. Just saying.
Oh no! My brother got it. Well, my brother had. First, he had snakes, but they got loose. But then when we were older, teenagers, he got a snake, and he had to give it away because he couldn't bear feeding it. He was so emotional about the little mice being eaten. To get rid of the snake. And what's up with the piranhas? Why do people have these as pets?
Because they get a bed wrap. They're kind of cool looking.
Yeah, they're very pretty.
And they're not into these horror movie frenzies when you feed them. They're not much different than other fish, just size.
Yeah, and you don't exactly put your hand in the tank. You know, who pets their fish?
I don't know.
You still have to clean the tank, so you got to put your hand in there. But it's not they don't come looking for you. If you haven't been feeding them, you might accidentally or viciously become lunch. I suppose it's possible, but look it up. They get a really bad rep.
It's true.
Oh, I know, but I still don't want them as a pet. I don't know, but I've never even heard of them being pet before. You've introduced me to something new. Deb, what do you think about Stephen's phone?
Peek in the studio while I tell Stephen how wonderful he is. I was just checking. All right. Anyway, I, for one, the picture that you put with this is really cool. I had to say that before I forgot. For two, I too think it's really cool that you incorporated all the different pieces. That way, because usually, she gets all excited. I got at least one from each prompt, and I didn't realize that she didn't get one, or I might have switched my poem and did a different one, but you brilliantly incorporated them, so she wound up getting them anyway, with the watermelon seeds and the rind snow, that brilliant phrasing, but I'm looking here and I'm thinking, you've got these four great little stanzas, you incorporated all the prompts, you got great rhyme and flow, a fun poem, and a 10. You know, it's harder to get the 10 the fewer words you have. So you're getting really good at bringing them in. And I'm so excited. I don't know if you're anywhere near as excited as I am, but only 3 to go. I can't wait to see what your 200th 10 is. Anyway.
Thanks, Deb.
You know, and you brought Snape in because Alan Rickman did the voice of Absalom in the 2010 and the 2016 versions of Alice in Wonderland. So he voiced Absalom in those films. So you brought me Alan Rickman as well. So brilliant. Let me bring in Wayne before he thinks I'm leaving him in the cold. I don't know if he's been here for a while. I like to bring people in at the end of comments. Hi, Wayne.
Hello. How you doing?
Good.
How's that tapping in your window?
Did you read Stephen's poem?
Yeah, I read Stephen's poem while I was still on hold for so long. I'm joking. Yeah, I read his poem. I've been out in the yard planting the manure and stuff, and I've been moving the washing dryer. I'm filthy, but I said this is a daily poem. Snakes hissing, caterpillars giving a high five, and meeting larvae playing around in the watermelon snow. I'm too tired to put the pieces together, but I know it's a good one, Steve. Thank you.
Thank you.
Awesome.
Are you saying you're all grubby, Wayne?
He's been out camping. You know what that means? There are dead bodies somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, there's dead bodies.
I do want to say thank you, Stephen, for bringing me Absalom, for bringing me each of the prompts in each one of the stanzas, and giving me a great story to boot. I appreciate it. And do you want to tell us what's going on over there? Got some stuff happening.
Yeah, tomorrow night over at A Poetic Slice of Life is the Poetic Inklings of Tomorrow, and we have beautiful autumn paintings from Leonid Afimov that Kay found. They're like Deb said, they almost all look like, to me I always tell Kay, they look like it's always raining because of the wet look that the paintings have, but they're just gorgeous paintings that really spark your muse. And then Thursday is my annual say goodbye to Summer Bash on the Movement of Sound. I think we're moving it to 9 p.m. because of the amount of songs we want to play. Jimmy Buffett. Gotta say goodbye to summer in class with Jimmy Buffett.
I knew it.
See if I wear paradise.
Waste it away again.
That's right.
You know, I think I still have my peanut butter. I still have my peanut butter, what is that called? My peanut butter parody. When he's stealing the peanut butter?
Yes.
Awesome. Okay, well, and actually, since we're just going over there, I'm just going to, do you have Friday? Do you have a show Friday? Yes, we do. You want to do Friday?
Yeah, Friday is something different with requests. Yeah, that's 8 p.m. And thank you, Deb, for letting me do this over in our room. But we're going to talk about sharks and the fact that their numbers are dwindling, mainly because of the shark fin soup demand. And so we're going to read some poems about that. And I got some pretty cool gifts of sharks acting like puppy dogs in the topic folder if you want to check it out. And I also have some very disturbing gifts from what the finners do to them as well. But check it out. It's pretty cool.
Awesome. I think I still have one that it's, play a good game of Russian roulette, but leave the sharks out of it. I'm going to bring that one. I think I wrote that point.
There you go.
And on Saturday, of course, I'm doing A League of Their Own at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Great film, right to any of the scenes and or characters. Anything you want, no homework required.
There's no crying in baseball.
There is no crying in baseball.
All right. And I do have a note before I get Deb read, I do want to, I'm going to do it after Deb reads. That way I can get myself together a little. All right, Deb, without further ado, ma'am. Your poem is on the board. It was on the board. I might have to redrop it. And you wrote to Carnivorous. There we go. I just dropped it again.
Awesome sauce. Okay. Now, you had said about go with facts or go with the story or whatever. So I sort of did both. And this is called Don't Let the Plumeria Perfuming the Air Fool Ya. Here we go. Yellow hibiscus flowers dot the island, mixed with orchids, gardenia, and jasmine. The bouquet surfs the tropical breezes, and every inhale sparks goose pimples on the skin. Butterflies flit and flutter on wings of painted lace, popping on pink petals, drinking nectar and dew, adding colors to the sky as they spiral and fly, looping an air ballet on the blue skyline hue. But slithering throughout the Hawaiian forest, carnivorous caterpillars crawl over the displays, and then with a snap like a Venus flytrap flap, the tiny talons wrap round the buggy guts buffet. Hunting anchored on shrubs, fern fronds, and sticks, they whip straight and capture the live animal prey, camouflaged by the green tints on the vegetation, leaving gooey trail lines like a slime puree. Nails pierce, pouncing on the praying mantis. Mouth munched the plump aphids and fruit flies, crunching the crickets, then the spiders and ants, moving like an inchworm on steroids as they rise. At night, they crawl into the huts and then climb on you. to dig and dive, just to swim in the ear canal wax, backstroking as they dig the tunnel to the brain, and go gnaw on juicy lobes as night snacks. And boom.
Oh my gosh. When I pick out these prompts, I almost picked one out today, but this is like off the topic of the poll. I'm sorry, but I just have to tell you, I almost picked a future prompt out today, and I couldn't watch the video, so I listened to it, but it was called Medicine Maggots. And I literally had to switch the screen so I didn't watch it, but I was like, Deb would love this. But I couldn't watch the video, so I just listened to the story because I literally couldn't watch the video. But there are certain things that I see that I get really excited. I'm like, oh, this person might write about that. You know, there's different ways you can go. But it makes me excited to see. I'm like, who's going to catch, going to do what, and if there's going to be scary stories. And I love it. I love that you went here because you just, I mean, it makes me smile, but it's just, it's terrible. You know, it's, yeah, sixth sense of liking things. Butterflies flit and flutter on wings of fluted lace. You make this so beautiful, beautiful, and then you kind of flip between the beautiful and the frightening, which is mm-hmm. awesome, because you see, then you go to popping on pink petals, drinking nectar and dew, and then adding colors to the sky and spiral and fly, looping an air ballet on the blue skyline hue. It is so beautiful. I'm running out of breath. I'm sorry. That is so beautiful. The written and so descriptive and so lovely. And then you've got foot slithering throughout the Hawaiian forest, the carnivorous carnivores crawl over the displays. So you complement it with that bit of dark and foreboding. And I love that you put the factual things in here, how you put it was Hawaii, and that you are able to give the entire story, the hunting anchored on the shrubs fern, how they kind of just camouflage things. But you do it in a formal way. You could watch the video, and then you somehow bring that factual information through this real life event that's happening through a poem, but also bringing in descriptions and the beauty, which is I like reading literature, and though I do like historical books, I do like historical fiction, because you get all the added you get a little bit of the real, but then you get a little bit of the fiction, and that's how poetry is, that I feel, when you start putting in these little factual things in this, I guess you would say, using all these beautiful poetic devices like descriptions and scene setting. So really, really well done. I think my two favorite stanzas were those two back-to-back, because I think it really highlights the fact that you can just be so beautiful and descriptive, and then, well, they're both descriptive, but then just make that turn into creepy, crawly things that are about to snap you and gobble you up. So very well done. And then the bug and gut buffet. Okay.
You know, thank you, Sky. Yeah, I thought it was really cool to learn that even after they turned, which these ones don't turn into butterflies, they actually turn into moths. I put a picture at the bottom, but those moths are carnivorous still. The dietary tastes keep with them. But it's also really cool that they like the sap-sucking insects, because they taste like honeydew secretion. I'm thinking, okay. Yeah, so they'd like to eat the – and do you ever see a plant? I would say it looks like it's got ick or something. It's got all these little dots all over it, and you wonder what the heck that is. That's an aphid, and they eat off of fruit trees and stuff. And so they, you know, they eat those bugs for the sweetness of it. So, you know, you want an apple? Here you go. Here's one of my favorite aphids. I'm like, ew. But no, I thought it was cool, because I know that butterflies – well, stop for a taste if they see blood. So, like, I guess we all have a dark side.
You do. And Stephen's torturing me on the board. Brilliant poem. What do you think, Rex?
Yeah, I really like it. If I'm not mistaken, that the ants use aphids as cows. That they use them like cows.
Mm-hmm.
They're really amazing. The insect world is just, I don't know, mind-boggling. It really is. I wouldn't have thought that when it turned into a moth that it would have still been able to be carnivorous. But, you know, I guess it is, you know, surprise. Or it should be no surprise, really. I love the story. You know, I couldn't help but think, you know, well, if I went to Hawaii, unfortunately, they would have to starve. But
me too.
Sorry.
Well, wait a minute. I really like spam, so I'd be okay.
Oh no! I meant the caterpillars digging in my ears. It would starve.
No. But that can happen anywhere. You can't blame it on Hawaii. Just saying.
No, well, if that's where the bug is native to, you got to blame it on Hawaii, you know. But anyway, that's part of the beauty of it, you know, where they're indigenous to, and that's why, you know, customs gets crazy about, you know, bringing in plants and flowers and things like that, because, you know, you don't know what's hitchhiking on them. Tarantulas are, I think, also known as banana spiders, and, you know, when you get a bunch of bananas, there could be tarantulas in it.
Yeah. Nested in your bunch. Sounds like
here we go again. Somehow Deb is limiting my food. Somehow Deb is well, limiting my food intake.
you were talking, Sky, about historical stuff. I think it's the scarab beetle. They use them to clean the bones. For
yes,
skeletons.
They do.
Yeah. I'll be expecting a poem from that.
Probably little buggers.
Thank you,
Rack.
And Steven, what do you think?
Oh, yeah, I like this. And real quick, off topic, my favorite scenes from those mummy movies are the scarab beetles when they just kind of clean a person up really fast. I love those scenes. Crack me up. Anyway.
And that noise.
I love this, Deb, because you start off so pretty and you know, like you always do. And then you bring in Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. So how could I not like this? Bringing it clean into the ear. This is just
I fully admit that was the idea that hit my head. I said, oh, well, I can turn around and put a little nod to the bug in the ear at the end of this one and creep everybody out with it. So, yeah. And, like, I never, ever had a doubt that Mr. Movie, I was going to say Queen, Mr. Movie King would get the nod. I would have been very disappointed had you not got the nod. Very cool. Thank you. Oh, and Wayne, I was telling everyone earlier how you threw down that challenge to see if anybody had what it takes to knock you off that Tic Mac Poe pedestal. Just saying. But I got to go, Sky. The phone's dying. I have something to take care of. But I had a fun time. The prompt was awesome, as always. And see everyone tomorrow. Love and respect.
Love and respect, Deb.
Thank you, Deb. All right. I am going. I know everybody's waiting for me to make an announcement really quick. So I'm going to do that. And I just wanted to let everybody here know that I'm throwing something out really quick. It's going to be the quickest show idea ever because there's a spot open tomorrow here at the Team of Voices, and I have some free time this week at night and decided to take that free spot. It will be moved to 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time as to not overlap with Poetic Slice. So I just wanted to let you guys know that if you wanted to join me here tomorrow, again, I know so soon you guys are going to be sick of me. I will be doing an impromptu down the tube, and we've got Cotton candy. It was created by a dentist. You want to go learn some stuff? There we go. We also have What If the Kraken is Alive Today? And there's a little thing in there. It's a little fun in a lost city of Heracleion, underwater lost city. And, again, you can go anywhere you want. You could write me a scary story about a kraken. You could bring me a pre-write if you have a kraken because the show is a little bit last minute. You could write me something about dentists, you know, making candy, cotton candy to bring in more customers. You could do really whatever you want. The topic, I just put it out now. Have a look. There's three videos you could watch. The cotton candy one is two videos together. Stop at the time that I told you to if you don't want to watch the whole thing because the prompt is only about the cotton candy. So you're going to have to stop the video halfway through because it goes on to other stuff. But I hope you guys will come visit me tomorrow, be hanging out. I don't usually do shows that day, but again, like I said, there was an opening and I have some free time, so I thought I would come and hang out with you. And don't forget, it's 7 p.m. Eastern, so not to overlap. So, there we go. That's my note.
You should throw the guillotine on there.
Maybe one day we'll get to it. but I, did I do it right? I did it right. Okay. Thank you again.
I was really,
and, go ahead. I'm sorry, what?
I said I was first. You said I could bring pre-writes about the Kraken, so I dropped a pre-write from the Kraken.
Oh, good. Yeah. Bring me new writes, pre-writes, whatever you want, as long as it's about those three things. Because honestly, I just like to talk about random stuff and like some of these. That's why I let you go completely fiction, and we could just mention them, and I like the topics, and it's homework, but it's really not. So I'm excited because I really like the Kraken. So I'm excited. Did I read it yet? The Kraken.
I don't know.
I did not. I did, yeah.
Nope,
all right, I'm excited. Nope. Okay. So, Wayne... and
yes.
I know that Deb's gone, but do you want to make a comment for her, and then I will drop yours?
Yeah, I had a comment for her. I said, I'm glad I'm not an inch tall and have to fight off one of them killer caterpillars. It'd be a rough job to fight them off. I have to carry my little .22 gun with me, a little bitty gun. This is a colorful poem, and it's going real well. And I got kind of sick of them with that thing crawling in my ear canal and swimming in the earwax. That was a little bit rough. Rax stole my comment. I said, if it got inside my ear, it would be die of starvation because there's not much brain in there for it to eat. So Rax stole my line on that one. But it's a good poem. I was there. I like the poem. It's enjoyable. Very good.
Awesome. Actually, I liked you. Are you going to be around for a little, Wayne? Because I think I'm going to drop Rack first. Is that okay with you? He gave me a
Yeah, okay. I'm going to pass out. I'm going to be sick, pass out. I don't know. I'm hanging in there. I'm here.
I got you and Rack left. So I'm going to drop Rack in tour, and I have an audio for him. So let me play that really quick.
Cold-Blooded by Raconteur. Her eyes were green, revealing the serpent within, constricting my dreams before her ivory fangs ever touched skin. Venomous words administered through innuendo and lies, mesmerizing gyrations complete her disguise. I'm simply not interesting enough to charm this viper, nor can I play the flute, so I'm forced to pay the piper. Intoxicated by the thought of her, as predicted, I seal my fate. Grabbing my cell phone, I ask her out on another date. End poem.
This is excellent. I got the Hurt Locker. I always love these Hurt Locker ones, but they always make me so sad. This one I thought was brilliantly done because, again, there's a duality in its metaphor using the idea of a snake. And you could say, you know, going through in the beginning and talking about how to charm snakes and that whole idea through it and kind of being taken by that venom and that charm. But then at the very end, you know, you bring that a little bit of insight to that double metaphor. To that dual meaning and into the metaphor, and you cement it in stone with the cell phone and asking for a date. And I think that the way that you don't give it away at the beginning, you kind of tease the audience to think, okay, well, this probably means something more. This is probably a metaphor for something else. And kind of giving it away at the end and making it a little bit more personal, I think brings definitely the emotion to it more than just, a snake getting out of hand, but within the relationship and wanting to charm, but, you know, having that, not go as you planned, I guess would say. I thought this was brilliantly done. I like the way you laid it out. I like how you brought in the idea with the snake charming. I think it was creative, and I don't think I've seen that before. So I always like when people are able to have a duality in their pieces or use a sense of metaphor, internal metaphor, to portray a more personal emotion and experience. Really, really well done, Rack.
Thank you. You know, the idea that, you know, different people bring out different things in each other is where, you know, what I was going for with that, because, you know, how, you know, people say, like, you know, oh, I think he's so funny, and other people are like, well, I don't see it. You know, the same thing about, you know, people calling someone a snake. No, they don't necessarily treat you like that, depending on how you treat them. So, you know, it's all, I guess, in what you bring out in each other. So that there's that idea, and you know, there's, you know, men like pretty things. So I'm willing. Some of them are willing to get bit, even if it means, you know, another. If it means they get another date, you know. So that was part of what was behind that thought.
Excellent. Yeah, I think perception is very much plays a part of in many things as well. Wayne, what do you think?
Well, what I said is, oh my God, you date a viper or your girl is a snake. I've dated many snakes in my life, and I could not charm any of them, but I did give him the play with both flute. The end.
Excellent. Well, I thank you. Thank you for bringing that. And I'm forced to pay the piper. I do like that too. I read this thing about the darker origins of the Pied Piper. I won't go into that now, but it was pretty interesting. I don't know why I've always looked those darker origins. Yeah.
Luring
yeah,
the children.
Yeah. Crazy. These dark stories, these things are coming through where the things come from. It's always quite interesting. Okay, let's see. We talked about Snake Island. We talked about the carnivorous caterpillars. And Wayne brought in, Rack, wait, before I move forward, do you have a show or anything?
One towards the end of the month, and I don't have any idea what my topics are going to be yet.
Okay, so keep your eye out for the end of the month for Rack and Tour. All right. So prompt 2, the Marble Cave. You know, there's a typo here. I wrote Marble Caves in Chile. It's supposed to be Marble Caves in Chile. Nobody corrected my typo. Anyway, it is formed over the last 6,000 years, and the water melted from the nearby glaciers, filling up the general Carrara Lake and washing up against these solid rocks, slowly carving out intricate caverns, which I thought were really beautiful, columns and tunnel systems. Over thousands of years, this mineral-rich glacier water also changed the color and shape of the marble cave formations to a beautiful hues of blues, greens, blacks, and yellows. And it was such a beautiful place. There's so many things that, you know, are out in the world. Too bad we're all not, like, rich and we can't all just go on a, you know, visit all these things.
No trip.
But we may not be able to, yeah, we may not be able to make all kinds of trips, but we can write poetry about it and let other people enjoy. So I'm excited to see what Wayne brought us today.
I don't know about that. Anyway, today I was so busy that I did about 30 different jobs today, so in between jobs, we came here and I've seen the show tonight, so I thought I'd write about it. So I started studying about the marble caves. And there's no way that waves, the ice glaciers melted and washed up against the wave baskets, so sores made caves like that. That was made by some other creature that used to live here on Earth. But anyway, here's my point. My poem is about, it's about those caves, and it's called Who Built the Marble Caves? And it goes like this. There are a lot of unexplained things on Earth, like the previous civilizations that were birthed. There's a new civilization about every 10,000 years. If you don't want to face reality, better close your ears. Now there's a lovely marble cave down in Chile. To think they were formed in 6,000 years by water is silly. It said water from other glaciers formed the caves. When did the water recede? That's not how the waves behave. On top of the caves, the top of the caves have been above water for a while. To think they formed by structures, they formed the structures. To think waves formed the structures make me smile. About 13,000 years ago, there was a highly intelligent species on Earth. They could cut granite and better than we can, and I'm not full of feces. The civilization could move the massive boulders uphill. Proof is everywhere, but scientists still want to nod still. Those marble caves were above the ocean. Half is still is. Designed by a creature made. It's creature made, and probably a residence. Now for bad news, the 10,000-year cycle is about here. We have not a lot we can do except try to live without fear. So living without fear. Latest estimate is the disaster will happen around 2043. I won't be 100 years old, but that's okay with me. What is it that wipes our planet clean every 10 millennium? Is Earth's poles flip and Earth stops rotating, causes momentum. The momentum of the oceans, which does not stop. 4 miles of water across the mountaintop. It all start all over again. So we do over 10,000 years, start all over again. So that's what's getting ready to happen. But that way, those caves wouldn't form by water bouncing off them rocks and making them smooth and holes and passageways and rooms. They didn't do that. It only makes sense that it would do that. The waves have to hit pretty hard. And if you're inside a cave, how does a wave go out through a cave and hit that hard to make a hole and make a room smooth like that? It's impossible. But, you know, just down in South America, they got villages down there that are 13,000 years old. That some smart civilization that did stuff that we can't even do, like melt rocks and carry 100-ton granite slabs up the mountainside and carve them where we can't even carve them today. So there was a smart civilization here a long time ago, and that's who formed the caves, in my opinion. But that's all I can say.
I love that. Brilliant, brilliant. First of all, I was on mute, but I want to tell you that I almost couldn't get myself back under control. They can cut the granite better than we can. I'm not full of feces. I went off the handle after that. I was on mute, so you couldn't hear, but I really, really went off the handle. I had to say, okay, no, you didn't refocus because you need to listen to the rest of the poem. But it was very hard. Because I was just tickled pink with that line. That was just brilliant. I also love that you went into, there is this ancient civilization before. You know, I like films like that, especially if you've ever seen The Fifth Element. You know, they're talked about. Oh, you've seen. Okay, so you know what I'm talking about? How there's like this ancient civilization, you know, an alien planet coming down and with bringing that whole thing. So I really like the idea of who made these caves. Well, it wasn't the water. You guys are all fooled because it's really this ancient civilization. And here are the claims why, because the Earth just kind of re-wipes itself out and does these things. So this is a theory that could very well be true. And there are many theories, you know, I mean, talking about all over the place. These kinds of the pyramids and
yes, yeah,
like the pyramids, like that. So I think that it's really cool that you took this route and didn't just go through, but actually went through this route. I thought it was very, very creative, very well done. You got some facts in there, which is pretty cool. It almost like an argument, like, nope, this is where it is, and this is where it comes from. But do you also bring in the formation itself and bringing in the facts and the marble caves, which I also thought was pretty cool. I have to say the creativeness and the idea and the take, I got to say I wasn't expecting that take, which is always great to read something and to say, oh, I didn't think of that, because I always, whenever I do these shows in particular, right below, because they are really factual, and sometimes people, you know, they don't quite know what I'm looking for if I put up a video about a place or an event. So I always try to give people a little, maybe like a little head start if they need one. Like I say, are they cuddly snakes, or is it this, or, you know, are we doing this? And I always put like maybe a little bit of like, if I were to write about it, what would some creative ways that I would go with? And that's what I try to do. If you notice right below those videos, I always do try to put a little note that says something, like this one I wrote, take me somewhere. And then, I wrote underneath the carnivorous caterpillars, it gives me a super scary story, or is this just a guy looking for some grub? You know, I always try to do that. So I love when people kind of take their own twists and their own turns, and they're able to be creative in their own right and think of something that I didn't quite think of in that. And so it's creative. I just love how the mind works and how creativity works, and brilliant, brilliant piece. I'm just like rambling on now. Great, I loved it.
Well, the poles do flip about every 10,000 years. I think it's like 8,000 something years, but they do flip, and they got proof by where the quartz grows. A quartz grows toward the North Pole, and if you look down in the ground, you see them growing towards the south, and they go to the north. And so there is, the poles do flip, and when the poles flip, the Earth comes to a standstill for a few seconds, but then starts turning the other way, and the sun rises in the west instead of the east. But the water keeps, when it stops, the Earth stops, the water keeps going, and that's what wipes the planet clean. And that's when we start all over again. That's when we start our civilizations all over, about every 10,000 years. And that's a true fact.
Yeah.
So, anyway, 2043.
Something to look forward to. Wayne, you're full of such wonderful news. Here's something to look forward to. We're going to get wiped out.
I can't wait.
I got
company just walked in. I'm going to have to run, guys. I got to take off here. I got somebody here in my door standing there looking at me.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Wayne, for writing. If you have time tomorrow, stop by. I've got some more topics up that are pretty cool. And thank you. I still will get a comment from Rack, but if you have to go, you'll listen to the backplay or something. But thank you, Wayne.
Before you go, Wayne, I give you 2 seconds real quick. There's a fine line between genius and insanity, and I think you lost your marbles.
He dropped. He didn't quite hear you. Do you want to make a full comment, and maybe you can hear it later?
I wanted him to hear the marble pun, but he did a fantastic job with it. Yeah, I loved also that same line when he got, he's not full of feces. I had a huge grin on my face because I love slipping in things like that, because, you know, the people that understand, you know, language and know what that word is, when you slip it in just the right way, they're like, did he just work that in? You know, I love doing stuff like that. There's a couple other words, you know, scat. Or something like that, you know. So you could slip things like that in, and anytime you can do that, I think that's a great little trick to catch someone's attention, especially when you're making a proclamation. Yeah, I'm not full of feces, you know. It's an interesting idea what he posed, and he did it in a beautifully poetic way.
I agree. And I agree about wordplay. I think that, you know, in a way, you know, poets have a kind of advantage when it comes to, you know, I may not know all the words, but within writing and reading, you know, I would like to think that a lot of poets a lot of writers have a good wealth of language, because, I mean, you kind of, you know, it's not all about language, but a lot of it is about language. So I think that if we do have that little bit of advantage point when we can take, you know, synonyms and kind of play them in to literature and lines in a way where sometimes it'll go over people's head. And I'm sure there are times that things have gone over my head. I don't quite know the word, but or where they were going. But for the most part, I think it's things to be able to do wordplay as well. You do that really well. You're very good. You know, I think, I don't know if this isn't a word, but I'm going to make it. You're a good punnist. Do you think that's not a word, right? It's not a word.
I think you just coined that word, yes. I
know.
What I say, no, I jump on any opening that I can get.
Yeah, it's like linguist, but a punnist. A punnist. Yeah, I'm going to say that to you all the time now. Raconteur is a punnist.
A pun is a rare medium when well done.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I am going to talk about some watermelon snow. You want to hear about what some watermelon snow?
I would love to hear about watermelons, but only if you mention the seeds.
Watermelon snow has nothing to do with watermelon. All right, let's see. Watermelon snow, also called snow algae, pink snow, red snow, or blood snow. It's a phenomenon caused, and I'm not even going to try to say all these scientific words, but it is a species of green algae containing a secondary red pigment. And unlike most species of fresh algae, this species appears to be cold loving and thrives in freezing water. This type of snow is common during summers in the alpine and the coastal polar regions worldwide, and it has also been linked to global warming. So, you know, there was no videos on this one because there was lots of ways you can kind of take it, and I was letting people, they can take it in their soapbox way, or they can be creative and write. If they did write a creative fictional piece about pink snow, I just asked them to put a little disclaimer about the actuality of, you know, the glaciers melting and how this is a phenomenon, and it can play a substantial role in glacial melting, because it does, the algae eats away at the snow, and it does cause glacial melting. So that was the only
Is that the same algae that causes the red tides?
No, I don't think so. I'm not sure. We'll have to look that up at a later time. Now I'm going to have to look that up. But that is it for the topic. Now we're just freelancing, so let me see. That was it for all those. I got everybody. And now we get to go off the hinges, because those were all the poems. Off the hinges.
It was Alan Reichman.
Uh-huh.
Or is it Rickman? How did you pronounce it? Rickman?
Oh, Alan Rickman. Yeah. Yeah. Alan Rickman.
Did you see Galaxy Quest?
Yes, I did. I seen that in theater. I haven't seen it since I've seen it. Like, I haven't seen it since I seen it as a teenager, so I couldn't. I don't think I do remember Alan Rickman, but I don't think I don't know, for some reason I just remember them doing the panel discussion. You know, maybe it was like after the film when they were doing the panel. That's the part that I really remember, and I think that's the only part I remember. But I mean, I remember the gist of the whole film. I just don't quite.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do. I seen that in theaters. That was pretty. That also had Tim the tool guy, right?
Tim Allen.
Tim Allen. Yeah.
Yeah, he's a famous comedian. The line was neither of theirs that's in my head. The guy dressed up as the alien. I think he was one of the leaders. Never give up, never surrender. When he did that line, that's the line that sticks in my head because he was quoting the line from the fictional movie. So I thought the movie had so many brilliant ideas in it. So much parody, so many sneaky things that they did that were really funny. And then the cliche of the doomsday weapons.
You know, when I hear his name, Alan Rickman, I don't automatically go to that film, but it really was a good film.
Right.
You know, of course, you know, I go Harry Potter, Robin Hood,
Snape,
Die Hard, Sweeney Todd. You know, he was just really brilliant, Sweeney Todd. You know, I go straight to those, but I do like that movie. I do remember it.
Didn't Johnny Depp play Sweeney Todd?
Yes, and it had Helen Carter. Oh, I love
Helen
her.
Helen Carter,
yes. She's quite brilliant. She used to be married to Tim Burton, so she's done a lot of. They're not married anymore, but she was in a lot of Tim Burton films. I think before they were married, and after. I mean, enduring. I don't know about after. I'm not sure. I don't know the date they were divorced, but I think they are divorced. But I don't remember if they had any films, Tim Burton films after that.
She was in Harry Potter too, right? Helena Bonham Carter?
Yeah. She was, I love her in that. She was so she does so many beautiful roles. She does absolutely so many beautiful roles. I think she's quite brilliant as well. And she's often casted with Johnny Depp because he's, you know, Tim Burton loves Johnny Depp. I don't know what it is, but Tim Burton definitely has his favorite.
Yeah.
Danny Elfman and
Nightmare Before Christmas.
Yeah, Nightmare Before Christmas. Tim Burton, Danny Elfman, and of course Johnny Depp. And that one also had what's her name? She played in Beetlejuice too, which is also Tim Burton.
Mm-hmm.
Danny Elfman. But who was that? I love her. She played in Beetlejuice too.
I'm trying to remember. I know exactly who you're talking about. I can visualize
Catherine,
her, but I don't know that.
Catherine O'Hara. Absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
She's a good one too. Oh, don't say it. So I'm thinking we can, you're forgetting one more film before we move on. Tim Burton, have you ever seen Corpse Bride?
Yes.
So Johnny Depp did that, and then it was also a Helena Carter. So in Corpse Bride, they were all together again too. It's a good one.
Who did Edward Scissorhands? That wasn't Tim Burton.
It was Tim Burton. It was Tim Burton and John Depp. Again. So, I told you, they just love each other. And the new Willy Wonka, too, was Tim Burton and Johnny Depp.
All right. What? I love that song from that movie, too. Pure Imagination, I think it's called. Mm-hmm. Come with me.
I just heard Charlie's story. They remade it.
Right, right.
We're going to go off the hinges, and I think we're going to be in a minute early. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to have you find a poem, any poem you want, and or just tell me what poem you want me to find. And I'm going to read a random poem, and you're going to read a random poem, and we're going to tell each other what we think, and then we're going to talk about the closing music and then go out. What do you think?
That works. Did you see did you see Pleading Eyes?
No, what's that?
That was my last front page pick.
Oh, Bleeding Eyes. Okay, let's see.
Pleading with a P.
Pleading Eyes. Okay. So
and
that's going...
I think that's
in
the
studio.
It should be, yeah.
Awesome.
If you search for Pleading, you'll find it, I think.
Okay. All right, and I have not read it. All right, so I've got the poem. I've got that, and I've got the one. Now, I read this Monday. It was Deb's prompt, but I enjoyed reading this one. Were you there Monday? You weren't there Monday,
no.
Right?
No.
You weren't there Monday. Okay. Here we go. I'm going to try reading this again. And then we're going to read yours, and then we're going to close out a little early and call
awesome.
It a day. So let's see.
Awesome.
All right. I'm not good at typing. Ethan, I'm not good at typing and talking at the same time. All right. This, I really enjoyed writing this one. It was for Deb's Monday night prompt, so it was just read. But you're going to have a personal reading tonight from me. So this is the Warble, the Wood Owl, and the Tick-Tock Clock by Sky Darkholm.
Oh,
the
that's awesome.
Ticks a ton. I shoot too many Grimm's fairy tales, I think. The rooster kicked a cock at quarter. I'm sorry?
No, I was going to give you some trivia that there was a cartoon on Bugs Bunny. It was about an owl. The owl's name was Owl Jolson, and he was a crooner, obviously, Owl Jolson. It was really cool. Just warbling and birds. Just anyway, sorry. let me hear the song, please.
Okay. You're everybody passing by. Okay. All right. This is The Warble, the Wood Owl, and the Tick-Tock Clock by Sky Darkholm. The rooster ticked a tock at 8:15, with heavy feet and a sad trotting tweet, the yellow warble worried she would be late. Her golden feathers were in a blithering row, a mad, frazzled, futterwhacking dance with time, for she thought the tock to wake was now. But when she saw the clock was off by 2, the wall of a clock she used to time her brew, she knew of the fuss that it must be askew. Her wrist-clock watch was set at 10:30, and the fear that the gears were a stutter came to a tick-tock heart-stop of an end. Perhaps it was quite right to say it was a start, for instead of primly going on with her day, the yellow bird thought it very fine to stay. She wished to rightly fix the stuttered clock and did not care of silly important businesses like teller work or even hunting for a snark. So with a tool or 2 or 3 or 16, she started tinkering with mechanical pins, the outs and ins, and all of the in-between. Now, it was in short the little-known quirk that the wood owl hooted his first retort every night at the hour of 9:03. So indeed, she had tinkered and clinkered without so much as a blink or pause, all for what she called tick-tock pause. And what of the timely wood owl, say you? Did the clock at last read 9:03? Were the talks finally in line with the right time? Were the ticks at last brought in tune? Sadly, we'll never know, for the warble took the wood owl and the wrist-clock watch and drowned them both in the lagoon. End poem.
Wow. I love the way you tied the two together. I wish I could see the picture better, but you know the intricacies of clockwork and the beauty of the owl and whatnot. The way you tied that together, I really love this. The way that story fleshed out, you know, I don't know, the whole crooning part too, because of the owl and the who, you know, it's kind of like a song in its own way. And you know, I guess that was of course early on in my childhood when I saw that cartoon that I was just telling you about. It was funny because it's a really, I think it was 1936 it came out, but you know, I saw it much later than that. It was funny because it was a family of owls, but the owls sang classical music, and this owl wanted to sing jazz. And, you know, the father was, like, appalled and kind of kicked him out, and he wandered into the studio, and everyone embraced it. He was like, you know, they thought he was amazing. But, you know, the embracing it for his differences and whatnot, I thought that was really a cool thought to the singing and the owl and the whole thing. But, yeah, I really like the story and the precision of the clock. You know, you bring that into the story with the pins and whatnot and the timing. I think you even mentioned crickets, which oddly enough, you could tell the temperature by counting a cricket's chirps. If you didn't know that, that's a nice bit of trivia to keep in your back pocket. The detail that made the story, though, I mean, it really came to life. I thought this was beautiful.
Appreciate that. Doing it. I found Jason, I'm not sure. Hello, Echo 3.
Hello.
Good
evening, everyone.
Hello. I'm sorry, I didn't quite hear your hello.
It's Sin. Hello. How are you?
How's it going, Sin?
It's going. I'm making some mac and cheese. Thought I'd call in and listen to the show and say hi to everybody.
We're a little off the rails.
I didn't get to catch the show's prompt until very late, and I'm just not that crafty to write something that quickly. But I loved your prompts. I thought they were great.
That's cool. If you do have time tomorrow, I'm doing an impromptu show because there's an opening tomorrow. It's at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The prompts are already up. If you want to have a look at those, too, the really random stuff. But Rack and I right now are a little off. We're off the rails because I read all the poems for the topic, and we were going to read one random poem each and then close out. So if you have something that you want to share, even if it's off topic, gather it up, and we'll do it right after Rack. Sound good? We're off the rails now.
Okay.
We're just doing whatever we want. So I'm gonna close out.
whatever I want, huh? Oh, you're putting yourself in trouble there. Okay.
You say she's getting herself in trouble, but I think she knows exactly what she's asking for.
Yeah.
You know, Sim has brilliant pieces, so I'm excited. I'm in good company here.
No, I was going to say that's exactly what I meant. You know, if you like the way he writes, you know, by saying bring whatever you want, you know what you're asking for when you say that to him.
He's quite brilliant, so I'm not too worried about it. I am I'm putting you in the studio now because I couldn't find it. So it's just going to take a minute to upload. Actually, I think it's right up. So I dropped your link. Let's see. I'm not good with multiple tabs. I'm terrible at it. All right, so we've got Pleading Eyes. And let's see if I can. Rack. Somebody talk so it's not so quiet while I'm trying to write this thing. How are you doing, Sim, by the way? How's it going? You got a show coming up? What are you doing any shows lately?
He's looking for his poem, so if he's got problems multitasking too, I'm the only one that could.
Well, no, I had myself muted. The kids were talking to me. No, I'm not doing anything. I'm barely online anymore. Rarely writing. Actually, I was typing up today. I wrote a poem recently for a contest, and I missed it because I wasn't online. And I wish that I had finished typing it because I would read that tonight, but I didn't. So I found a piece that I'll read. It's an obscure one. But no, I'm not doing anything. Actually, Deb hit me up to co-host one with Hatter, and maybe I'll do that in the coming future. But other than that, no, I'm really not doing anything.
Cool.
Much
you know,
with poetry
there,
at all.
I feel like we have some pretty cool conversations. You're both good at conversationalist, you know, conversating. I'm just making saying really weird. I can't get this in the studio. Brack, you're killing me. All right, let's see. Pleading eyes. Let's try one more time. Brack and Tour. Oh. Sky. All right. Let's see if this works. Put this in the studio, play it, it's processing. But, yeah, so tomorrow, if you guys are free, I'm on again at 7 p.m. Yeah. Eastern Standard Time. And I only went with three prompts this time. They're pretty cool. And they're up there. Cotton candy and some other stuff. Some Kraken. All right, I got it. Are you ready? Here we go. Four rack.
Pleading Eyes by Raconteur. Seduced by the sunrise, pondering where I'm going. Mesmerized by the moonlight, reflecting on where I've been. Aching to know acceptance, struggling with challenges I can't hope to win. Clinging to figments of my imagination, little more than pixels on a screen. Losing my grip on reality, trapped within the cracks I've fallen between. The world has me under a microscope. Still nobody sees me for who I am. I wear my emotions on my sleeve, yet even the people that know me don't seem to understand. Seemingly, all I do is lament about the time that I've spent chasing a dream I can't seem to fulfill, perpetrating the theft of any time I have left, ensuring I never will. The essence of who I am left behind on the page, manufacturing hallucinations of a familiar stranger, hyperbole wrapped in metaphor, concealing my weaknesses from danger. Aspiring to be a sonnet, achieving only a brevity. My soliloquy solicits star-studded skies, offering the manifestation of everything reflected there, falling endlessly from my pleading eyes. End poem.
Ah, Rack. And someone's beautiful, too. Again, the Hurt Locker. This folder is killing me in a beautiful way, though, because you write it so beautifully. Clinging to the fragments of my imagination, a little more than pixels on a screen, losing my grip on reality, trapped within the cracks I've fallen between. Really, really love that. It guts out your heart a little bit, Rack. You know, the world has me under a microscope, so nobody ever sees me for who I am. You know, when people feel that, you know, you see me, but you don't really see me. You know, I wear my emotions on my sleeve, yet the people that know me don't seem to understand when, you know, one is trying to be open and honest, and yet people just don't seem to grasp, you know, what we're putting forth.
or truly understand it in the way that we need them to. I think this piece was incredibly deep. I see that it's already on a ton of lists, and I know why, because it was beautifully done. Again, you put it in perspective of, you know, situational, in particular with you, and then again on a grander scale of being secluded and being, you know, people can take this in many different ways, consume it to their perspective. But again, knowing you, I get the privilege of being able to see it as much as I can from your perspective and perhaps where this comes from. And I think it is such a raw and honest, you know, bleeding on the page, especially here, right here, too. I really liked this. I mean, I liked the whole thing, but this piece, too. The essence of who I am left behind on the page. Manufacturing hallucinations, a familiar stranger, a hyperbole rap metaphor. I really, really love that. There is such beautiful language in this. And, you know, there's beautiful language, and then there's beautiful language tied to emotion. And I think those are the type of poems that move people. And this is definitely one of those. Brilliantly done.
Thanks, Sin, Scott.
Thank you for sharing it. And Sin, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I have to second that. Personal seclusion, what I get out of this, how we're trapped inside our own minds and what people can't see, what we allow other people to see, are two different prisons. And prisons, something at that as well. I want to hear you read live one of these times, though. That would be some. I want to catch you live just once, man. Your delivery is always on point. How many takes does it take for a bracket to get it right?
Yeah, it's hard for me to read live because of my eye, and, you know, when I write sometimes, you know, like all of us, so you go through different gyrations and different wording, and my mind, you know, because I'm not really always reading what's on the screen, it takes shape differently, and there's quite a couple of poems that I've actually recorded just a slightly different version of what is on the, what wound up on the page. So that actually, when I read it, I do it about a verse at a time. And, you know, I memorize the verse and I read it over and over a few times. And then I pause it because it's a digital pause. You don't hear it. So I can get away with it. So it's like literally one verse at a time.
All right. Cool.
Yeah, it's hard for me to try and do it live. I really wish I could.
Well, I think it's pristine, and you've mastered it. It sounds good, and
I appreciate it.
Is,
you know, I think it's amazing how you do it in sections. It feels so cohesive, and that despite you know, your inability to do certain things, that people don't let that stop them from doing them. You know, just because something is difficult doesn't mean it's impossible. So I really like that, you know, you kind of came up with this way of doing it verse by verse. And, you know, some people might not know it's because your eyes and inability to really see the screen. And when you think about that, having to memorize each stanza and put forth that emotion, even through the pause and go back through memory or go, you know, half through memory, half through, you know, doing what you do, and it still always sounds so cohesive, and you cannot hear the pause in it. And I think that's quite brilliant the way you do it. And I thank you for bringing that one.
Yeah, I can't. Yeah. I can't memorize shit. So I my hat off to you.
It's actually reverse, because when it rhymes, it's easier, because I remember where the direction's going. So, you know, I know what I rhymed with what. So, you know, it's a little easier to try and memorize. And again, it's only a verse at a time. So it's like, you know, from one point to the next, it's like, okay, I know where I'm going with this one. So I got this verse down. It's like the opening, you know, is the big thing, and then once I get through that, the rest usually flows on its own. Sometimes, you know, and you know, it helps keep me honest too with the rhyme. You know, later on, if it gets too wordy or if the cadence is off, you know, I'll trip myself up when I try and read it, and that's how I find out. You know, by saying it out loud and trying to read it, it's like, you know, I stumble over it, or I pause, or I have to take that extra breath. It's like, oh, that doesn't work right, so I have to go back. I usually tend to go back and redo it. It frustrates me sometimes, yeah. But you know.
Like, yeah, I agree with you there. Spoken word gave my writing a whole new level of craft, because the emoting of a poem in the verbal manner makes you so much more aware of work, what you're doing, you know, that it brings it to a whole nother level. It advances it, you know, far beyond the pen and the paper. It elevates you and elevates your writing when you start reading it aloud.
It kind of makes you think about why you picked the words that you did, you know?
Yeah. Yep, and how you lay them out. So I agree with you there. Thank you for the look inside you, how you write, man. I appreciate that. It makes me get a whole new respect and appreciation for your work. So thank you.
Thanks.
Awesome. Now, I see an adult label on your poem. It's 13, right? It will be able to go PG-13?
Yeah, I put all my work as adult.
Okay.
Yeah,
there's no cursing in it. There's just innuendo. Okay. All right. You are up.
Read between the line innuendo. I can hear it in all my poems, but there's no actual foul language.
Okay. All right. You have the mic.
Okay, Diligent Frizzles. Gray men long ago journeyed, trying to mate a dinosaur with an elephant hiked from home. Golden explosions decimated, failures bold, never known. Encompass the foil hat rationale, dial in the beakers, tis my pants, listening to opaque Armstrong hellos. Not alone in purple garrisons rotating. Prehistoric illustrations, lava spilt, ominous rays circling above as the swaying vibration alters manic stipulations blind, destroying Earth's natural fur, choking out the intrusive postulations, seeding my womb so colors birth through ventricular boxes presumed. Reproach brought new endeavors, seeping liquid blood twinges, grinding hips, dirty stipulates, cosmic vibrant goo. Passionately zagging lulls of blue, serpents born out of breath kisses, swirling love letters around unnourished hearts. Now just perception radiates obsidian, shattered blood and mineral ruby packs, universal infrastructure test tube dreams, cage scribbles brittle us, ancient saliva vines, rhapsody of pastel hinted cheeks of summer, soul chased backwards, darkened clouds. Thoughts rumble as wrist cutter lightning drowns. Omnipotent is internalization raping each pound, dissolving barrier walls of spinning flu, shits, yellow straining, porcelain swirling upon tattered floating remnants better to forget, incoherent death walk, black light glitter on eyeballs, sleepless, vacant opal. Quandaries creating scattered trampoline flips and pink spandex dragons. Once subpoenaed in lustful ways, youth denies maturity, and the lighted one, smoke a day glow transitions, which elaborates the posthumous values of histories, diligent puzzles, and poems.
I'm just reading, excellent. I was just reading Wayne's comment. Everything you write up reads like a Floyd song. I think you're one of the members undercover. If you're not, you should contact the band and tell them I sent you. Wayne, brilliant comments. This piece, your piece is always, you have to digest it, I think. It definitely works that you can take stanza by stanza. It's true. And you know, works like that, you can take each stanza and kind of pull them apart and kind of say, okay, well, where are we going with this one? And you literally have to take it stanza by stanza apart. And I think, you know, there's such an art in that because, you know, whether you sat there and kind of loomed over every stanza and every sentence for a period of time, a long period of time, to try to get to this, you know, way of writing where you do have to digest, or whether you just kind of just page, I think it's quite brilliant because either way you get the outcome of the reader can really take it or has to take it piece by piece and really go over it and read it more than once. Of course, you get the one, you've got the surface. You've got the surface emotion, you've got the surface feeling, you've got the surface reading. And for me, the surface reading would definitely be the the serpents born, you know, and the breath of kisses. And then, of course, the incoherent death walk, like glitter in the vacant opal. I think that one was quite, that one, I think that one, it's hard to pick, but I think that one was my favorite stanza. The sleeping vacant opal, quandaries creating scattered trampoline flips and pink spandex dragons. You know, when you throw out a stanza like that, of course, there's a internal message that you as the writer will be going towards, and then one as us as a reader can kind of digest and kind of consume in our own perspective. And in that way, it does have a little bit of abstract touch to it. You know, I think that word is used too much. This is abstract. This is that. I do think the abstract word is used too much. But the thing about it is that when I think it's the only word that people know how to describe the duality of a poem being meaningful and lines being meaning a certain way and specific images and thoughts and moments and memories and objects being important or triggering to the writer. Like if I said something like, if I said goodbye to Willow and the Meadowlark, that just for you, that would just be, you would think about a willow tree and maybe a meadowlark. But often in my writing, I put it out, and it's a symbolism for me personally. The willow and the meadowlark in my writing is a symbolization because of a poem that I wrote a while ago for me. So when I throw that out, I'm actually making a nod to myself. Of course, the reader doesn't see it that way. So when people put the word abstract, I think it often falls underneath that category, where I can put that language out and the person reading it is going to absorb something different than maybe I meant it to be. But either way, it is still consumable. And that's how I feel about that stanza. I think that there's some definite maybe words and language that might mean something different for me to you, but either way I can still consume it in my perspective. And I that to me is when people say abstract, that's really what I see being cornered in that corner there, I guess. So we need a better word
you
for it.
You say abstract, I say surreal.
Austin, you say surreal? Maybe I like that better, yeah.
I say surreal.
I think it's too much because to explain what I just explained. And I think when people hit that mark, that word's just you. So
I do hate to be that corner, but I like that. It's real. I think I'm going to use that from now on. I think I'm stealing that from you. I also love that you definitely delve into the piece by saying grr and choking, you know, and just being that. I think that was my second favorite stanza, the destroying earth, not grr, and bring hands in. This was brilliantly done, Sin. I've got 6 minutes, so I'm going to go straight to Rack's comment. We filled the time up. I don't know how we did it. We're talking to each other. Rack, what do you think?
Well, first, you touched on a couple of things. I got the abstract foremost in my mind, but you said something else that I wanted to touch on, and now I'm losing it. But there's an overlap in that word, you know, when you say abstract too. It's just another kind of a metaphor. I like surreal better than abstract as well. You know, it speaks more to the character than really the fact that, you know, you're not getting what he's talking about necessarily, or it's not a direct correlation to what he's talking about. It's an abstract to where he's going, but. As far as the language of the poem, that was it. I chuckled when you said consume every verse, a verse, because of the content of what he said. You know, I've put it in context with what he wrote when you said consume it, and he's talking about swallowing and things like that. And so when you said it, that's why I chuckled. You know, but anyway. I love the language you used, and just in the title when you said frizzle, I mean that word's not a very common word, and it puts a specific thought in my head. It's got a beautiful connotation to it, and it definitely conjures a certain type of visual. And then you used a few other words throughout the poem that were in the same vein in my mind, that also, you know, kind of carried the theme throughout the whole thing, making it very cohesive. So, I mean, I really love the way that you tied it all together and constructed it. To me, it's not so much I almost want to compare it not to really to a speech per se, but, you know, I guess, you know, more like a song. I like the way you put it out there, and you say the feelings that you do in the way that you did.
Thanks, Eric.
Excellent. Thank you.
Yeah, it's tomfoolery and real life. It's poke, you know. Real life and perception and everything else, you know. It's a little fun and reality.
Yeah.
A little bit of everything, you know.
A little bit of everything I love. I do enjoy it. We've got 2 minutes left. I'm sorry to cut this conversation short. I apologize. Sin, I want to thank you for calling too. And I want to thank who called. Let's see. See how good my memory is. Wayne, A.P. Taylor, and Sin, of course, for all writing, for all enjoying the prompt, and for calling in and spending some time with me. Thanks, Brad, for hanging out. We've got 90 seconds, so I've got to talk about the music we're closing out with. It is Bare Naked Ladies, again, a rock band formed in 1988 in Ontario. The band developed a cult following in Canada with their self-titled 1991 cassette, becoming the first independent release to be certified gold in Canada. They reached mainstream success in Canada when their debut with the Reprise Records, Gordon, featured If I Had a Million Dollars, which I always get stuck in my head for weeks at a time. I always sing that song. I don't know why. And Brian Wilson was received in 1992. The band's popularity subsequently spread to the U.S., beginning with versions of Brian Wilson and Old Apartment, which is what we opened up with off their 1996 live album in the Rock Spectacle, followed by their fourth studio album, Stunts. Their breakout success was in 1998. The album featured their highest charting hit, 1 Week, of course, everybody knows that one, as well, It's All Been Done, which is what we're closing out with. So I hope you guys enjoyed. I'm sorry again to have to rush a little bit, but we were talking so much, time flew by. Thank you guys so much again. And I'll see you tomorrow if you come by. All right, hope you guys enjoy the closeout song.
Bye.